Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. This is part two of the Analytics of Dynasty 2021 edition book launch event. So in this episode, at the beginning of it, we are joined by Peter Howard, who contributed a chapter on rookie metrics. And we were also later joined by Scott Connor, who did a chapter on tight end premium, which is outstanding. You can find that in the Analytics of Dynasty 2021 edition. And it'll give you an edge, I think, in terms of understanding and constructing rosters and tight end premium. So both outstanding chapters, both outstanding contributors. Really excited to have them aboard. So we had this conversation. You can check it out. And until next time, continue to embrace the variance, and we'll talk again very soon. Look what we have here. We have a special guest jumping in. And this is a contributor to the Analytics of Dynasty.
Never heard of him.
Mr. Peter Howard. And goes by PA Howdy on Twitter.
And do I really?
Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you, my friend?
What's up? Pretty good. Just got in, you know. Got told there was a party going on. I thought I'd join. Where's the booth?
I see you got a little open bar t-shirt on. Yep. Feeling good? Feeling good? We were just going to take some questions in the Analytics of Dynasty YouTube chat we've got going on here, and one of them jumped out to me that was right down your alley. So it says what are your big rookie metric takeaways? And of course, you wrote the chapter in the Analytics of Dynasty 2021 edition that is about rookie metrics. So I'd be interested in your thoughts in terms of what are your big metric takeaways, if you sort of want to run it down for us.
Sure. They all kind of suck. You should just watch the tape. That's let's see. From top to bottom, I had a question in my Discord the other day that kind of threw me, because we get so into this stuff. And at this point, every tab or every position in my database has got like 130 columns, and you just want to add more. And a question was like, I can't keep up with this stuff. Like, what am I meant to do? And I was like, all right, that's a fair question. And so I broke it down for him. It's like, based on the position you're looking at, there are a few just reference things that I end up just looking at before I do anything else. And so why don't I run that down? With wide receiver, it's fairly easy. You're pretty much looking at the average. And we looked at that in the chapter, whether it's better to go best, worst, or last per stat. On average, or in general, it's better to look at the average of a wide receiver's career rather than their best year or their last year or their first year. But you have to break all of this down by individual situations. I guess that would be my big takeaway. Stats can lead you to an idea of what a player does measuring up to past players. But then when you look at DK Metcalf or AJ Brown, or you look at a player like, well, Rondell Moore in this class, they played one season. Like, it's a little unfair to compare an average to a player that, like, Calvin Johnson basically has a perfect the perfect prospect profile. And he played a full college career in a slightly weaker conference with an all-out offense. So it really does pay to understand the average, especially at wide receiver, but then go look at that player. Like, I mean, you don't have to watch the tape. Obviously, none of us do, but at least go look at what they experienced, right? Were they injured a lot? Was the team struggling? Did they never have a quarterback and they were just using a jugs machine? I mean, individual context matters, but wide receiver, you're basically looking at the average yards per team pass attempt. Seems to beat out market share, such as Dominator or MS Yards or whatever else we've typically been profiling in. However, Dominator or percentage calculation still gives us a very good idea, and they still have pretty good signal, but of who the player was on that team. And basically what you're looking for is a player who was dominant, to use the Dominator terminology, in that situation. Because the other big takeaway I've got at wide receiver is, while there are conference adjustments to make and it's very clear which conference you come from matters, if you look at the averages for something like yards per team pass attempt, it's just variations on a theme. At the end of the day, I don't think we're going to be able to find a secret metric that is going to correctly adjust someone like Adam Thielen playing outside the CFB and have him compare evenly to, again, Calvin Johnson or Tyler Boyd. Actually, he's a small guy with just about a perfect draft profile in terms of production. So that's wide receiver. I look at the age at which they produced or first became very dominant on that team compared to their average. So players that have been successful in the NFL have certain market share or yards per team pass attempts thresholds, and you can look at that average and compare it to that player. And that's how I found the best way of looking at wide receivers. And for shorthand for that, you look at their average yards per team pass attempt and you look at their breakout age. Those things aren't going to model well, but it's going to give you a pretty good idea of if they were dominant, how will they compare to past prospects, and then go dig into the player themselves. Running back, you're pretty much looking at the best year because the position works differently. All these, I'll get to that when I talk about tight end, but you can't have multiple running backs, or you can, but you typically don't have multiple running backs on the team being dominant at the position. Wide receivers tend to have an ability to force the issue of I am more talented, you should target me more. And running backs don't. It's pretty easy to ignore the guy you're leaving on the bench. And so someone like Miles Sanders who gets sucked behind Saquon Barkley, that actually matters, which is why the best year a player actually plays tends to be the most useful year. If you're just looking at one, and really you shouldn't just look at one, but if you're just looking at one, do go look at what the best of what they did. And a receiving role is still strongly indicative of someone that's going to be useful for fantasy, especially as we increasingly use PPR leagues. That's just always going to be the case, especially where so few running backs don't increase their role in the receiving game once they get to college. Melvin Gordon is pretty much the lone exception. And yet I watched through Adrian Peterson's career, one of the best running backs to ever play the position, no matter what else he might be. And every year it was maybe he'll catch 30 passes this season. You never know. And it just, I'm sure he's capable. It's just not what they do with him, and it's not what he does, okay? And on the other hand, you do have the Derrick Henrys of the world, so you do want to look about how dominant and how successful at being dominant in terms of a yards per team attempt, not pass attempt, basis they are, especially when your conference suggests that. But yeah, a shorthand for all of that, because again, we're getting to that 130 column max, is look at their points per game. It's actually a surprisingly useful shorthand. Just sort the class by points per game. Adjust it by class, you can do that as well. But really,
fantasy points per game.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, you can calculate our fantasy points PPR per game for college stats relatively easily. We all know that formula. You know, you get so many points for 10 rushing yards and receiving yards, and so many points. So it's actually it's like a fake model because the coefficients are, you know, made up for our little game. But it does a pretty good job. If you just want to sort by one thing, go look at the best year points per game. It's not, and to be very clear, like someone outproduced Christian McCaffrey in his draft class in points per game. So do not, you know, don't base everything on it, but it gives you a fair idea of where they're at. And none of this stuff ranks very well. That's another takeaway, and which is why I go down to look at individual players. But I'm running on here, and I still haven't finished rolling my cigarette. So let me move on. And tight end. Actually, I did find a really useful metric at tight end this year, which actually proved to be useless in my models, but it's actually relatively good just as a single standalone statistic. I'm calling it efficiency score in mine, but all it is yards per team pass attempt above conference average in their final year. That actually very few, apart from Jimmy Graham, who only played 1 year, but he's Jimmy Graham, so it doesn't fucking matter. But almost all running back, all tight ends who have done well in the NFL has a positive score, and it's not something that most tight ends get a positive score in. And again, you wouldn't like to bet your life on it without draft capital to actually adjust by, but as a single stat, it was actually pretty interesting. And yeah, the lone takeaway there is you're really looking at last year for tight ends. And I think we rolled that all up in the chapter as well. So there's a lot of stuff to go for. But if you want to break it down, wide receiver, look at what they did on average and then take into context situation. With running backs, look at the best year they ever had. Were they a receiver? And points per game can do that for you in PPR scoring. And at tight end, you're really looking for that special blend of yards per team pass attempt that whoever's getting a large role and being fairly efficient with it, that's fairly unusual at the tight end position. And that bodes well for the NFL. And you're mostly looking at that last year. With quarterback, just no, I'm not doing it. Screw you. I don't know. I have no idea. No idea. Yeah. I give.
Yeah. I was waiting for the quarterback one here.
Yeah. Am I allowed to swear? Because I'm in a swearing mood, apparently. But yeah, I haven't really dug into tight end for rookie stats for a couple years now. Because the last time I did, I mean, I tilt enough of a running back and tight end. Quarterbacks, just like whoever gets that stuff right, is just basically a wizard. Like, I believe in magic.
If it was solvable, an NFL team would have solved it, because I don't know, they've got thousands of XR budgets for this, right? And they've got access to people that are a lot smarter at this than anyone in football and anyone in the fantasy community. We have really smart people, but
No, you call me an idiot. I'm going to defend myself right now. That's what I heard. No, I agree with that to a large extent.
Did you know Matthew Patricia was a rocket scientist?
Yeah, right. I agree with that to a large extent, but I do, we wouldn't be doing the things we do or spend all our hobby time doing, at least, if we didn't think we could do something, right? Secretly underneath the belief that we could solve it. And, you know, if everyone believes that it would be done if it's already done, then no one would ever do it. Frankly, we would never try. So I agree with that to a large extent. I think I respect teams more than I say I respect teams, because it's not fun to respect teams. They're not people, so we can make fun of them, and that's fun. But yeah, I do agree with that. There's so much money and research, but they also do have biases, for example. And I did an episode of my podcast recently, plug. But it was talking about how the NFL does a pretty good job of adjusting to where talent is. They like big, tall, athletic players too. But when Calvin Ridley and DJ Moore were clearly the best prospects, they just went to the two shorter guys. Like, so in a large sense, the NFL is already doing a lot of this for us. That's why draft capital helps. But they do have their own biases. That's why we find values like Stephon Diggs and T.Y. Hilton falling into third, fourth round, and Adam Thielen gets junked into an undrafted free agent draw. And Tyler Johnson, obviously, that's obviously going to happen, obviously. And this year, we've got two players who look to be some of the most productive from their class. Coming from a conference, the NFL typically doesn't spend more than a fifth round pick in. So will they adjust that far? I don't know, but luckily they're going to tell us before we have to know. And I've had some objection to that, because the Big Ten or the Big West or whatever it is has had players being drafted in the first round. And apparently the Big Ten West is a new designation. But again, since 2015, they've been calling it the Big Ten West. At least I can say that. And like, the highest pick is Kenny Bell, who I actually also did kind of like, and they spent a fifth round pick on him. So,
Who are the two receivers, Peter?
I said one of the names already, didn't I? Rashad Bateman, and also Rondell Moore. They're both going from the Big Ten West, aren't they? And to be fair to both, I think they are both better known than, say, Tyler Johnson was. So it was always kind of a non-NFL vibe, whereas both of those seem to be getting, main media coverage or whatever we want to track. So I don't think the NFL is going to ignore them, which is good, because I do think they're definitely both great players. Or at least we're in their situation, and that's the only situation they could have played in. So it's the only one I think it's fair to judge them in, is the other aspect to that. I like adjustments just as much as the next adjustment junkie, but it's a bit much to say, why didn't he go play in the SEC West? Because he wasn't in the SEC. Okay. I mean, he doesn't have numbers the SEC has. No, because he wasn't there. So let's just take a look at what he actually did.
Yeah. No, it's,
but anyway, how are you guys? Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. We're good. Good. Okay, get myself a couple of beers, to celebrate the launch of this thing. And it's one of those things where leading up to this, it's like high stress, and you got to get it out. And then now it's like, yeah, I'm done. I'm like, let's take a night off and have a little fun. So, all right. So we got some questions in the chat. I'll pull them up here, and we'll have a little discussion about some of these.
I can't see you, Matt. You should know that.
That's okay. I'm going to pop them up and I'll read them here for us.
Let's see. When would you be concerned about a quarterback with a top six finish is not a reliable guy? Current events with example, with Goff as an example, seems like a good time to buy the panic thoughts. I am yes on that, Scott, and I'll kick it to other people here. I am yes on that because if you sort of rank the quarterbacks in terms of, I mean, he's a average to above average yards per attempt guy, and it is some of that McVay maybe, but ultimately, are there 32 guys walking the face of the earth that really are franchise quarterbacks? No. Where does Goff rank on that list? Like, I don't know. Like, it's tough to make it worse than 20. And ultimately, I think that guy's a starting quarterback in the NFL. So even if there's a move, I don't think he's going to be a starter someplace. So I'd be buying that. So I don't know what your guys' thoughts are.
It's quarterback, man. I don't know. I would say it's weird when we talk about quarterbacks. We know it's such a tough position. And, like, let's go really extreme and say he's one of the best 100 players at the position in the world. Let's just hat tip the fact that the guy is, like, competing at the, like, you don't get that hard of a competition level outside of maybe, like, trying to get in NASA or something. That's the only other comparison I can come up with. What I would say is just an opinion, because I really... With quarterback, here's what I do in Dynasty. I want Ben Roethlisberger. I want the old guys no one wants anymore, but yep. I know what they are. That's what I want. Or I want the young guys everyone hates for no apparent reason, like the second-year running quarterbacks. Kyler Murray this year, he did pretty well for me in the year before that. I was like, yeah, sure, Lamar Jackson. Some people like him. Like, that seems to be the only time I invest in youth. And so far, it's working out pretty well, I got to say. But, yeah... I would say consider Jared Goff, Andy Dalton. He's fine. He's decent. You know, Andy Dalton had a top five finish, and we kept holding on to that. The fact is, he's not one of those guys. Sean McVay can play quarterback through the headset a little bit, and that helps out. Cool. But yeah, you're not buying into a guy with some ceiling that, and very few quarterbacks have a difference making season at all. It's Matt Ryan, weirdly, and then all the prolific rushers and Patrick Mahomes and occasionally Peyton Manning, you know. And so we're really not looking for a difference maker. And to the questioner's point, Jared Goff's fine as long as you think he can hold the job for that year. It's the same reason I buy those older guys. Like, I know what they are, and they're actually probably better than most of the guys we're buying with youth, and they come cheaper. So if Jared Goff's being sold for, you know, fiddlestick for whatever he is in your league, yeah, I'm fine rolling him as my quarterback. So as long as you think he's going to keep the job, and I don't see, I haven't heard a lot of noise that they're going to swear it out or nothing. But yeah, and my ultimate lesson or my ultimate takeaway with quarterback is, even in Superflex, I'm fine just not trying to win at that position, and Goff fits that description fine. He's going to provide me a nice flourish. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Just talking. I thought someone would, like, stop me and be like, no, what I think. And I just kept going.
my question style is to ask people questions and then shut up. So.
All right. That will work very badly for me because I just keep blathering on.
You got to be careful with that because that'll get you in trouble. Right. So.
Oh, yeah. You
know,
yeah.
It does. Ask the witness the question and then see what they say. And. That can go.
I caught trouble, really, though. So it's fine. It works well for me. I'm here to be owned.
Adam, your thoughts?
No, probably along the same lines as Peter. He fits the profile that I like. So it's a matter of where I can get him and where I can slot him in. You know, if we're talking super flex, I don't know. Does Goff end up being? Does he go somewhere else and he ends up being? Like Winston. This past year, where he's like my quarterback three, even though he's not a starter somewhere. I just feel like those guys are more likely to get starting jobs later on. So we'll go with the, you know, high pedigree. I know he was in the McVay system and he's not this, you know, I think comparing him to Andy Dalton's actually, you know, pretty accurate in terms of especially skill level. So, you know, it's a matter of where I can get him at. You know, maybe he's just a quarterback two for me and he's got some upside. But, you know, if he's just going to stay in with the Rams, I think he's essentially a quarterback too. I'll probably go with someone else. But, I mean, you know, I was ripping off Stafford and Kirk Cousins. I mean, I think a lot of people would hate that having the two of them, you know, as your quarterbacks in the league. And, you know, I'll roll with them quarterback. And again, like I'm with Peter. I'll go with these older guys, whereas everyone wants to pay up for these guys. You know, they're going to be paying up for Trevor Lawrence or something like that in startup drafts. And
I would say the cheapest time, if we're talking about rookies, the cheapest time to get quarterbacks is drafts. In your startup draft, in your rookie draft, that's fine. I'm not saying, like, don't take Trevor Lawrence early in a rookie draft. I mean, who gives a fuck? It's a rookie pick. Pardon my language. Sure. Again, I'm not sure I can swear. Apparently, that's me tonight. So, by all means, like someone asked me the other day, would you take one of these quarterbacks, 101, 102, or should I trade the pick? I'm like, if someone's willing to come up and get what I hear, and that's not, like, I have no rookie evaluation on QBs, but I hear it's like the greatest quarterback prospect ever, then yeah, if everyone's too cowardly to come up and get him, just take him. And so, yeah, that's fine. I'm not okay on the value. I'm just saying, if I'm spending value outside of a rookie pick or a draft pick, like I have to trade actual players or draft picks to get them, I'm not spending that at quarterback. It's already hard enough to get running backs and wide receiver, and they're more likely to win you stuff. So nearly swore again, man. You see that?
But, yeah. Peter, to your point about the cheapest time to get them, you know, is in those drafts. I think the thing that like people maybe are not thinking about right now is, does anyone in a one quarterback league, does anyone realize how hard it is to trade for Patrick Mahomes? I actually think it's I think it's almost harder than in a super flex or a two quarterback. And the reason is because what they produce for you at that position. And then in the long term, like it is impossible. And so if you just look at ADP in a one quarterback league versus like other positional players, running back, wide receiver there, you couldn't even trade him for Mahomes straight up. Like, I mean, you're talking about Amari Cooper or guys like that. Like no one's doing that if they own Patrick Mahomes in a one quarterback league. Start one quarterback league. So
no, because there's almost no value in it. It's like, look, exactly. You won't give me the value. And even if you would, like, I can't get this anywhere else. It's like having Peyton Manning. I get it. But again, recognize that it's like that one thing that happens. I mean, Lamar Jackson was it. Most quarterbacks are it for a season, maybe another season later on. Russell Wilson is continually threshold and then lets you down towards the end of the season. But it's just relatively rare. So, yeah, you're right. It's hard to really put a value on that, even in single quarterback leagues. That's it.
I used him as a
pivot. That's Trevor Lawrence. I mean, go for it. I don't know.
I used him as a pivot to get to 101 last year and start one. So I did a cascade trade. Mahomes in 109 for DJ Moore in 105. And then I gave Corey Davis 105, 205, and 209. For 101, Daryl Henderson and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is basically roster filler. So that's basically the way in which I did it. But I'm sort of with you guys. I don't think there's a lot of those trades. Okay. So a couple more questions here, and then we can we're at an hour and a half, so we can wrap up. I don't know if it's Seth. I don't know if it's it's probably too early to say. Does Mahomes retire as a Chief? That's so far down the line. It's trending that way, but
I might be dead before that happens.
So. Yeah, exactly. We're all day to day here.
I do have questions about the way his game ages, because I'm not a quarterback guy. I've listened to a lot of different breakdowns, including some film. I know it's heresy around here, but and a lot of the descriptions, I'm like, does that
we like film? Well? We like all information.
I know you do. I fucking hate it. I think they're all evil, obviously. No, not really. but. I was watching a lot about his dropbacks are so unusual because they're bad, but he's so good he can make up for it. Yep. I'm like, that doesn't like, I don't know. There's some of those just unusual talents that, you know, do so well. And then when you just can't quite keep up with, like, I know at wide receiver, there are some wide receivers where it's not something that ages. It's like they say about marksmanship, it's a perishable skill. And if you can't get in the habit of doing what you need to when you don't have that particular skill anymore, I don't know how it ages. But having said that, you will never find me bet against Patrick Mahomes. I'm just done. Nope. But, you know, throwing it out there for the wolves, I guess. I don't know how that ages. But, yeah, I would have said Tom Brady retired a Patriot. So I'm definitely not making that bet at this point in Patrick Mahomes' career.
Yeah, for sure.
I heard about the drop backs as well.
Yeah.
Peter. Like that is something that they work on. Like, you know, we have Mayfield here in Cleveland, and that's all he did. and Mahomes was doing the same thing, and he was just screwing it up left and right. And it was just like the guys on the team are just like, all right, what is he doing? Like, seriously, you can't get this. Like, and you're right. Like, and he just makes up for it. And that's, I heard the exact same thing.
So. And that's a weird thing. It's like Russell Wilson should not play the way he does.
Yep.
But I'm not telling him to stop. I'm not. No, no. Yep. And he shouldn't be able to keep it up for this long. For the ageist truthers out there, like, he should be, you know, losing some of that mobility. It doesn't matter. It, Russell Wilson's just going to be able to keep running around people in a phone box the rest of his life. I'm not taking that bet. Sorry. So I'm not. Yeah, I wouldn't take that bet against Mahomes as well. But for anyone who likes to evaluate quarterbacks, like, that's what you got to consider.
For sure, for sure. All right, a couple more here. Let's see. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire fits, and this is from Brian. Clyde Edwards-Helaire fits, see if I can get this pop up, fits George's narrative of a gold standard asset at his position. Did the landing spot blow up his spot and he'll validate hype one season later? Is he going to be marred in a quasi running back by committee situations? Thoughts?
Sorry, one more time.
Yeah. Basically, is Clyde Edwards-Helaire going to be like a running back one, or do you expect him to be sort of in a quasi running back by committee situation?
All right. I'm kind of working on presenting a way of thinking, or the way I think about some things, and it's not quite clear. It's probably is very clear by my introduction. I haven't quite worked out the details, but here's the thing. If you're trying to win in Dynasty specifically by outranking people, quit. Just quit. Go play redraft. Like, good luck putting Derrick Henry above Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey this year. Like, I get the way the question's phrased, but you're not holding everyone you're asking it to anything they have to stand by. Like, can he be a top 12? Yeah, there you go. And I can't be owned by that. The question isn't, can he? Yeah, he can. He's playing for the damn Chiefs. This year, he underperformed. He's going to keep getting the opportunity. He was a fairly good rusher and catcher. Catcher? Yeah, that'll do. In college. So the upside is definitely there. The question is, should you pay what he's worth right now for that potential? And I think yes. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire makes a list of quarterbacks whose ceiling is undervalued by his currently dynasty price. Now, you're going to have to pay for him despite an underwhelming year as a rookie quarterback on running back on the Chiefs. You know, the best situation of all. You're going to have to pay. So you do have to ante up for it. I think there are probably cheaper bets, but yeah, I think he's someone I go in on at this value. And it's not because I think that upside is there. I think it's undervalued in his current valuation in Dynasty, not because I'm ranking him above other players. I just think, like, Jonathan Taylor, like, actually just finished as a top 12, so isn't a great example of it, but he didn't do it for the whole year, so that's why he came to mind. The upside of his top 12 season is baked into his value. You don't just have to ante up. You gotta add some sugar on top.
Yep.
But their upside of getting there is, and again, Taylor just did it. So, you know, hat tip, he probably should be more valuable. But that extra source for the fact that he could do it multiple times, that's already in his value. And I think that's a little unfair to not unfair, but that's not in Clyde Edwards-Helaire's value. And so you're getting the similar potential despite an underwhelming rookie year for less money or less price or whatever we want to call it. And for that reason, I put him on the year. I'm not, depending on my team, I'm not sure if that's where I want to ante up right now. Because, you know, you've got to consider your team situation. If you need a running back, if there's another running back with the same potential going for even less, I think Miles Sanders fits that list. I also think on the outside, depending on how draft capital bigotry happens, Austin Eckler could still snag another top 12 season, and that costs you a lot less right now. Same with James Robinson. Again, he's a top 12 running back, and it's not baked into his value because everyone's a little uncertain about the fact he's an undrafted free agent, which is fair, but it's maybe hurting his value a little more than it should. So he's probably cheaper than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and again, he's actually already done it. So is he the guy? No. Is he a guy I would pay for that upside for? Yes. And I'm stopping talking. I'm learning from my interview. Look at this. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
So what do you think, Adam?
So isn't the price that you pay for Taylor more upside than anything else? Like I guess when I look at Edwards-Helaire is I'm failing to see the upside. So I will say that I actually learned a little process from Clyde Edwards-Helaire because I'm always talent over situation, right? And I'm always going to do that. And I actually failed to understand that the Chiefs situation is an elite situation and we have to factor that in. And that's how I look at it from the running back point of view. But I will say that with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think that he's just limited because of the offense that they are in, the other guys on the team that are, you know, they're going to go to Kelce and they're going to go to Tyreek Hill before they're going to go to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I think where you look at Jonathan Taylor, and I think that he just has just a greater upside because he is the guy there. So I differ a little bit from you on that, but I will say that I do think I don't know that I would go with him being a value at this price, but I think that he's probably dipped below where his value was before compared to Taylor, and Taylor's obviously the higher asset there. So I don't really have any issue with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I don't know that I want to be paying for a guy who, in my opinion, like lacks upside. So I don't know.
I'm happy to tell you you're wrong and he's got upside, but I just want to do a slight callback.
No, I think he has upside. I just don't think it's as much as Taylor's.
Yeah. No, I can argue about that. I get what you mean. I get what you're saying. I'm not sure I'm quite there on it. I did just want to do a, because I believe in sourcing my stuff. The specific evaluation of Patrick Mahomes I was thinking of is by a guy called Brett Coleman, who definitely does not need my shout out because he's like, he's actually a thing. Apparently I didn't know that, but that his video on YouTube breaking down Patrick Mahomes' game was just, it was really a good breakdown, and I see why he's a really big thing, apparently. 284K subscribers on YouTube, I did not know. But I wanted to let you all know where I was taking that film evaluation from, because it was definitely was not mine. I really enjoyed his video, so, you know, sourcing your stuff. Does Clyde Edwards-Helaire have the upside of Jonathan Taylor? Yeah, I mean, outside of thinking we can evaluate running back talent, which I am yet to see any nerd prove that they can rank Saquon Barkley over Orleans Darkwa reasonably with numbers that are sticky and actually prove that they're better consistently over time. Like, we don't really have a great understanding of how we, I know it. I know for a fact Saquon Barkley is better than most other running backs you can name, but can I prove it? Kind of, like, evaded tackles per touch and those kind of numbers get us pretty close, but those also put TJ Yeldon in a similar tier as most of the running backs you love, like Dalvin Cook, for example. TJ Yeldon does pretty well in those numbers. It's why Josh Hernsmeyer is always like, he's just TJ Yeldon. Just get TJ Yeldon. We actually struggle. And part of it isn't because what the running backs are doing. It's because the position works as a function of volume. And teams have their own biases and they have their own preferences. And all of that mixes a lot of noise into the sample. So do I think Jonathan Taylor's a better runner? I'm not sure. I've seen enough of him in the NFL to say for sure. I know he's definitely built to be a longer-term runner, even though I'm not a big sizist or BMI truther. And with running back hood, I mean, Philip Lindsay is still out there, like, being a machine, frankly, even if Melvin Gordon is there. And there's a number of other small guys we can mention, such as Barry Sanders, but there you go. So do I know I can prove that Jonathan Taylor is a better running back than Clyde Edwards-Helaire? No. What I do know is Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to have a better situation every year he plays. He has significant three-down skill set, and he was disappointing in the running game this year, but frankly, the Chiefs don't run a lot when they get down to the red zone. Like that, and that's going to be a feature of his situation as well. So do I think he has the upside? There, you kind of have to rely on the Chiefs throwing a lot, and that's not saying a lot about the player. Can the player just break a large run and consistently score touchdowns more regularly than we expect? Yes. So I think, you know, both have similar upside, although I can see how it's closer to Jonathan Taylor's range of outcomes than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But again, you have to pay more for it. And
That's fair.
I'm not sure of that.
Like, I get that. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into the tape versus analytics, you know, the numbers.
I'll just bow down if you want to. Like, I can prove more easily that analytics are bad at explaining
which one. I agree. I think tape is in the eye of the beholder, for sure. I guess I was with you on the situation, and that's kind of an elite situation, but at the same time, it's an elite situation in terms of getting Clyde Edwards-Helaire into a situation where it's easier for him to make runs because the defenses are assuming pass and they have all these great weapons around. Whereas, you know, Taylor,
I put it this way. I can definitely see a year where Clyde Edwards-Helaire plays more of an Austin Ekeler role, which is a runner, but just a devastating receiving threat. Like, he's got that in his skill set. Jonathan Taylor's a good receiver, but doesn't have that level of receiving chops, at least in his past. And he's not playing with the Chiefs. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad receiver. I'm saying he's a more average above average receiver for the running back position. But there are some running backs we see are just devastating through the receiving game, kind of mixed into one. With Christian McCaffrey, you've kind of got like James White rolled together with Jonathan Taylor, and that's why it's such a special source. So on a more potent offense, could Clyde Edwards-Helaire increase his receiving role and it just be fantasy gold? Yes, he could. I don't, like you say, I think it's closer to the top of his range of outcomes than you might say for the path Jonathan Taylor has to take to get to the top five. So there you're talking about what do I have to invest? And again, where are there cheaper running backs? I'm not sure I'm aiming for them.
Well, I mean, let's just look at like goal line carries, right? So, I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, I don't know, maybe you have the data. Well, so not really good at the goal line, but at the same time, I mean, they have a lot of different weapons that they can go to. They can have, you know, Kelsey there. They get, you know, they have Tyreek Hill, whatnot. Whereas with Taylor, it just seems like he's the guy there. So I think in terms of fantasy value and fantasy points, Clyde Edwards-Helaire could have had a much better year had it not been for a couple goal line carries, you know.
Look at it this way.
Opportunities.
Mecole Hardman ain't it. I know lots of people thought he was a breakout wide receiver this year, and I'm not trouncing the player because he's on the Chiefs and he was decent and better than I thought he was actually going to be. So to be fair, there's that. But could Clyde Edwards-Helaire be a more valuable receiver threat than, you know, Mecole Hardman or Sammy Watkins, who runs nine routes fairly badly but consistently gets targeted there? Yeah, I think they could definitely find value in the short receiving game, at least for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, it's very easy to make the argument that I think, and again, I don't have the data in front of me, and this isn't really my argument, but I have heard Scott Barrett talk consistently about how throwing to a running back is actually much more valuable than rushing for a running back in fantasy and also for teams in terms of expected points in the NFL. Could the Chiefs try to take advantage of that? Yeah. Yeah. They got one of the best passers in the NFL, a really good coach, a tight end who is amazing, but at this point he's set the benchmark so hard even he can't even meet it. And I was going to make an age argument for Kelsey then, but like everyone else, the tight ends just play until they're a million years old. Just ignore Kelsey's age. That would be my suggestion. But Sammy Watkins, yeah, I think he could fade. I think he could leave. I mean, he's going to be way too expensive probably to keep Sammy Watkins for another year or two than getting anyone else who can run nine routes. Kenny Stills is a better player and he out there. So yeah. Or they don't replace him and they replace. I'm just making hypotheticals here, but I'm pointing out that there is a larger path to volume for Clyde Edwards-Helaire outside of them rushing more in the red zone or becoming more of a rushing team, because he does have a skill set that they utilized a little bit in his first year, at least. That's all.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was looking at some of the stats, and you know, one of the big things on running backs coming out is yards per route run. Right. And Taylor smashes Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And when you look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he very much blends in. It almost looks not good. You know, when you sort of look at some of his ancillary stuff from this year in terms of his yards per route run, it's below average.
I don't trust yards per route run. Just throwing that out there. If you keep a number behind a paywall, but it's a secret and the solution to everything, I don't believe you. Put it out here, let me test it, and I'll believe in it. I'm just throwing that out there as yards per route run shade, not a shade on your take there. That's probably true. I haven't checked their... you're going to make me look stuff up, man. I just got home from work. Come on, give me a break here. I can check their yards per team pass attempt, which... Or their opportunity share, I guess. The other thing that's pretty good.
By the way, Peter, like I wouldn't put Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire in anywhere near one another in terms of the type of pass catcher, because I think that they're totally different. And this is tape talking. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is much better as a receiving back from what I've seen on tape, whereas I think Taylor is more of a dump off back, and I don't know what the data shows, because the data is just going to show you, like, you know, whether they caught the pass or, you know, dropped the pass or whatever.
I was going to say, I was kind of assuming, you know, that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a better receiver just by nature of, you know, pre-draft process. I haven't checked. So wants to tell me that's not true, like, that's an assumption I made without looking.
Well, I mean, I can look at it just from, like, he's a hands catcher, whereas I don't really think, and I know Taylor catches with his hands, but like I said, he's more of a dump off back to me. Like, and there are a lot of guys, and I actually look at Melvin Gordon. Like, if you watch Melvin Gordon versus a Christian McCaffrey, I know the numbers aren't going to add up at all, but when I watch the type of plays that Christian McCaffrey is getting in when he's catching the ball versus a Melvin Gordon, they're two totally different things. So
I don't have per pass attempt in here. I've only got per attempt. I was gonna say either of them have an ADOT worth mentioning, because that's the thing about receiving and running back, where they catch the ball so much at and behind the line of scrimmage, it's really hard to distinguish them in terms of passing game. So
yeah,
typically where is it? Average, yeah, okay. Jonathan Taylor is a minus 1.2 ADOT, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a 0.7 ADOT. So there you go. Yeah, I can't judge him in terms of receiver through the stats I can pull up real quickly. So yeah, I'll just concede the point. Maybe Taylor's better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the receiving game. I'm still probably going to take Patrick Mahomes, whoever, and that receiving game over whatever Jonathan Taylor gets stuck with, though.
See, it's funny because I don't think the Kansas City receiving game actually helps Clyde Edwards-Helaire. See, and that's the thing and this is where I think narrative get us in trouble. Narratives get us in trouble. Is
they do.
You know, people wanted to make this cop to Brian Westbrook. Let's be really honest about what Brian Westbrook was, which was, outside of Terrell Owens, was the best pass catcher that Donovan McNabb ever threw to. Okay. Let's be honest about that. And he only threw to Terrell Owens for like, what, 20 some odd games. Outside of that, Brian Westbrook was the best pass catcher he threw to in Philadelphia. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is behind a Hall of Fame tight end. He's behind one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. You know, they have other investments made at wide receiver. You know, and if you go back and look at that entire Donovan McNabb tenure, right, when you look at the money, and we're going to welcome Scott Conner to the show, by the way. Sorry, I got in the middle of a thing. Scott, welcome.
Hey, Scott.
What's up, guys? Bring some life to this party, right? I'm enjoying it, Jordan. Go ahead. I love the argument.
Yeah, the offense just wasn't the type of situation where you're going to see a lot of yards for him. You're not going to see a lot of volume for him. What is Andy Reid, who's going to go down as one of the best, I don't know, the top dozen coaches of all time? What do you think he's going to do? Spend his time putting together an offense based around the $650-700 million they invested in the passing game? Or are they going to put it in an undersized running back who was inefficient in college? That one's not – the calculus on that one isn't difficult. And he did.
Yeah, but you can't counter a narrative with a narrative from his college. I would say he's the third most efficient yards per team pass attempt player on the – so I think he's right behind Kelsey and Tyreek Hill in terms of the value he was providing on a per team attempt basis. And it does require a narrative, but I could see them – plummet, especially if they want to expand Patrick Mahomes' skill set, to follow on from our earlier conversation about how his skill set ages. And if they do utilize the shorter receiving game, it is a path to him getting more volume. And I think he can be decent with it, especially on that team. So, yeah, that's where I'd say the
other. Is yards per team passing attempt a volume statistic?
It's a special merger of volume and efficiency. It's actually tests. The separation I mean make between an efficiency and a volume stat is one that is quote unquote sticky, and yards per team pass attempt is actually sticky, whereas most efficiency stats aren't. But since it's a per stat, technically it's also an efficiency stat, and so it's kind of that's why I use it.
Got it.
So it's volume with like an efficiency adjustment. I don't know how you describe that.
Got it. Yeah, I mean to be high in that stat, you need to be high in volume, right? Like you need to be playing a lot of, and even if you're inefficient, right? I mean, I bet you Logan Thomas, right, is going to show up pretty well in that stat, and he was incredibly inefficient from a yards per route run just because he played every snap, right? He ran every route, so he's just going to aggregate. It's interesting just because I don't know. No. I think he was force fed. I think Edwards-Helaire was force fed a situation that he wasn't up for. And we're going to continue to be let down by his upside. I think that there's probably value exploring a trade. I think that like, if you gave me a first in Clyde Edwards-Helaire for Jonathan Taylor, I'd have to think hard about that. Right. I have to think hard about that. And I would just say, like, I did this in the book. And if you're sort of interested in more of this, you know, I think you just look back at some of the base rate stuff. You look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire's profile, which I actually wrote the Josh Jacobs Clyde Edwards-Helaire profile in the book. And basically the Josh Jacobs profile was the first round running back who hit as a rookie. And the Clyde Edwards-Helaire profile was the incoming first round rookie. And you compare them against each other over the next 3 years. So the Jacobs profile, which Clyde Edwards-Helaire now fits because he got on the board in year one with a hit, 81% of them hit at least once in the next 3 years. That's an advantage over 71% of the incoming rookies. 38% of them hit for the next three seasons. Three straight top 24 seasonal finishes. Compare that to the incoming rookies, 14%. When you look at the wins, right, what the actual win is, it's a win difference over the next 3 years. So when you add it up, like that's a really lucrative profile. And you could go back and nitpick on Christian McCaffrey. And I'm not going to put Clyde Edwards-Helaire in Christian McCaffrey's tier at all. But I'll just say he's sort of landed one in a COVID year where some of the adjustment stuff might have been off. I think if we write off his upside at this point, it's probably historically it doesn't have a great basis for it. And I just say, I think, you know, if the market is actually fading him, it's fascinating because if you look at his base rate of hitting last year where he was going, it would be over what his base rate hit rate is. And now he's going, you know, in a range where you would expect like a 60% hit rate or something like that going forward. And he's up near 81% in terms of some of his base rate stuff. So when you just think about that, like it's actually totally flipped. He was a sell last year and he's a buy this year. That's just my take on it. Scott, you have any thoughts on Clyde Edwards-Helaire?
I wanted to get your thoughts on what's the NFL's adjustment on draft capital now with running backs? Because I don't think you can look at draft capital from even 5 years ago and compare it to today. It's different. I mean, you could take – I know this is hypothetical. You could take Ezekiel Elliott and put him in any draft class. He's not going in the top 10, top 15, top 20 right now. So what is the adjustment? I know CEH is interesting because he technically has the first-round draft capital. But you almost have an adjustment forward from, you know, would he have gone higher 10 years ago? Maybe, maybe not. If you're looking at individual profiles, maybe not. But I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say like Jonathan Taylor would have probably gone higher 10 years ago. So, you know, would you make that move considering what he did in his first year, even if you are getting the extra first round pick on top? But I'm just curious where the sliding scale is. I don't think we can look at draft capital even 3 to 5 years ago for running backs and say it's anything close to what we can predict going forward. Maybe I'm off on that. I'm curious what the adjustment is though, because I think we have to adjust down.
See, I have sort of a contrarian take on this. I don't know.
I want to hear it. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah. So I'll just say, like, going forward, the first and the second round guys that land for a hit in year one, they perform about the same.
Right.
So when you sort of look at you, if you were to sort of bin the guys that hit from the top 64 picks of this draft, so you get Swift, you get Taylor, and you get Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, they perform similarly over the next 3 years. So I would just say, like, as that is a threshold, you know, you can sort of look at him and say, you know, should he have gone later? Maybe should he have gone earlier? You know, should those, like, that profile is performed about the same. So that's a relatively flat tier once you start looking at that, those guys that hit. So they can feel pretty good about that, right? So that would sort of be the initial salvo on the Clyde Edwards-Helaire part. I don't think there's a lot of proof that running backs are going later.
Me neither at all. Actually, I think this is something that was really rampant last off season, and no matter how you put the brackets, that draft capital thing is just trying to fit a narrative. And then the minute these running backs got taken in the second and third round, everyone stopped saying it. It's like chasing a dog's tail that's already chasing its own tail. Like, the NFL does go through patterns of, oh my God, Trent Richardson, let's not draft him in the first round anymore. But you can't chase someone making a mistake to try and make your own mistake, if you know what I mean. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Jordan, but it's just not
no,
true.
No, that's fine. I actually think it's I don't think it's necessarily the NFL devaluing the position. I actually think it's an oversaturation of supply. Right. So, you know, you can look at any situation in a supply or demand type perspective. The demand is lower from the NFL for these guys because the existing supply that they have is really good. Right. And that's built on running backs that were, you know, that were really high draft picks recently. Right. Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, heck, Leonard Fournette. Like, we have a lot of first round running backs that have gone recently. And there's still a lot of them are still on rookie deals. And so when you have guys that have been, you know, we've been blessed with really, really good running back classes in the past couple of years. And so when you sort of look at that, you look around the NFL and you say, all right, well, people aren't buying running backs. Well, why? Right. One explanation would be, well, maybe they're not as good. Right. Okay. This class, I don't think that's true. Right. That wouldn't be a reasonable explanation because this class was very good, I thought. The other one is, hey, the position's not as valuable, or we just don't have a need for it. And I think that you can't really separate at this point. And maybe in 10 years we'll see a clear trend, but we haven't seen a clear trend to date in terms of my research of these guys going later, or that there'd be less draft pedigree spent on running backs. And we've seen pro analytics teams draft running backs in the first two rounds, right? We saw J.K. Dobbins to Baltimore. We saw Miles Sanders to Philly. We saw Jonathan Taylor to the Colts, right? That's a pretty savvy franchise. And, you know, we saw Cam Akers, and heck, we saw Clyde Edwards-Helaire to an Andy Reid offense. And Andy Reid was heading, you know, the passing efficiency stuff, you know, 2 decades ago, right? He was way ahead of that curve. So we've consistently seen smart franchises actually chase it. I actually think there's an efficiency going the other way. You're better off to spend money. You're better off to spend a pick on a rookie running back because the finances of it make a lot of sense, which I think is something that we don't necessarily, especially if you're going to let them walk, right? So we'll see on, like, Aaron Jones. We'll see on these guys. Like, if Green Bay does that, like, that actually is kind of fits somewhat of what my thought is.
Well, I think one thing.
So go ahead, Scott. Yeah, that's my long answer.
One of the reasons I kind of talked about Josh Jacobs last year was that exact reason you talked about with the contract. You know, if you think now that you see running backs getting paid, it actually makes sense. If you're going to turn and burn a running back and you don't ever plan on signing him to an extension, you know, if you believe that, I'll just say, like, Najee Harris, because he's probably going to be the first running back off the board this year, probably. If you think you can get 5, 6, 7 years out of him, and you think he's good, it makes sense to basically say, because you can calculate day one, if you draft him at pick 24 in the first round, you can calculate how much he's going to cost you over 7 years. He has no leverage ever over 7 years. You could franchise tag him twice. The calculation on Josh Jacobs was like 7 years, $50 million. The Raiders would own him for 7 years, which is probably 90 to 95% of his usefulness in the league. They own him at a finite cost that they can evaluate and allocate right away. He can never get out of that. Now, would you want to franchise tag a running back in year 6, year 7? Maybe not. Probably just depends. But you already know what he's going to be. You already have that control. He can never be any more than that. He can never hurt you any more than what that commitment might be. So I do see the value of maybe, you know, especially when you take the, and maybe this will change with the cost of the franchise tag now on the running backs. Now that these guys have gotten paid, it's probably going to go more significantly up over the next couple of years. But it does make sense to grab potentially that fifth year option. If you know you're going to have a guy that if he doesn't hit, it's not going to matter. But if he does, you know, you look back at some of these running backs that have faded after year five, year six, year seven, it would have been probably smarter to do that than ever talk about a contract extension. My other question for you, Jordan, was, okay, say like Travis Etienne goes in the top 15 this year, just randomly, right? Just randomly goes in the top 15. Do we overcorrect on that and say that is a massive out? That is the equivalent of, because you just said saturation is maybe why players fell, because there's not as much of a demand. But then we see a team pick a guy in the top 15, top 20. How high do we push him? How much do we weight that the other way? Because of what you just said after the, because I would agree the last 3 or 4 years, we've had a massive influx of running back talent. The league is saturated with it at this point.
Yeah, I do think that the market is absolutely saturated. If he went that high, you know, I did look at this. I just thought it was super unlikely, just in terms of the needs up there. Again, it got to a point where it's like, even independent of, you know, if you put Saquon Barkley in this class, like, you're still probably not going to get an early pick, right? Like, take whoever you want. It's just not, you know, the Jacksonville, then you got the Jets, who's probably going to take a quarterback. Then Miami, like, they could be in on a quarterback. Like, I don't know, maybe in a past life, a running back goes there, maybe. Atlanta, Cincinnati, right? Like, then Philly's got an answer. Detroit's got an answer. Carolina's got an answer. Denver, I guess, arguably doesn't have an answer. I don't know. We could debate that one. You know, Dallas has an answer. The Giants have an answer. You know, San Francisco doesn't. So that would be an interesting one, right? The Chargers do. Minnesota does. I would say that the Patriots probably do. You know, does Arizona, right? Is that a landing spot? That would be interesting. I doubt they go that route, but you know what I mean? That would all be interesting. I think it's just unlikely. But if he went there, I mean, I think we have to – you have to adjust to it, right? And so we, you know, we talk a lot about like base rates and draft pedigree mattering and that being the starting point. I think that's true. If a guy's going to be a second round pick, that's significantly different than a first round pick in terms of A, the length of the contract, and B, the extent of the commitment. And what we see over and over again is the first round guys get initial opportunities that are bigger than the second round guys. And we'll consistently, the consistent trend is that second round guys, it takes them 8 weeks or so sort of get on the board. And, you know, once they get going, it's kind of their job to take over. That's kind of what we see. We see a much different thing with first round guys. You know, so I think there actually is some value in waiting on the other guys if you can collect the spread, but be that as it may, you know, I think it would be eye opening, and I think we'd have to adjust whatever he was on the board beforehand. You'd have to move him up, right? You'd have to move ETN up if he went much higher than we expected.
Do you think that the, cause a first round running back, even I'm looking at just the last 10 years, first round running back is very rare, even over the last 10 years. I mean, it's pretty rare for it to happen. There's only been, counting last year, actually 11 seasons, there's been 16 first round running backs in the last 11 seasons. So it's pretty rare that it happens. But I mean, I don't even have your data in front of me, but just in terms of, you know, the difference between one that goes in the top 10 or top 15 compared to the back half of the first round, you know, it looks like the, at least if I was just doing a value study of the higher end ones, a lot better the higher you go. Once you get down a little bit further, I mean, I'm like, Trent Richardson is the ultimate outlier, like the ultimate outlier, smashed in year one and then disappeared by year three. And I mean, that's the ultimate outlier. But almost all the ones that I'm looking at outside of the top,
I'm not sure 20, that's so much of an outlier.
I mean, from a value perspective, I mean, it is. I'm looking dynasty value. Well, all the other ones in the top 10 maintain their value for at least 4 years, other than CJ Spiller. But everyone else did. So, I mean, 1 out of 7, I guess, if you'd call that an outlier. But I guess I'm also looking at these back half of the first round guys. I mean, and you can debate on what the difference between those guys are and the top, you know, 15 picks in the second round. I don't really see that big of a difference, like you were saying before.
Yeah. So I actually did this in 2020. I broke down the hit rate. I just have the base rate. I didn't break down the density of these guys through this, but I did look at the base rate hit. 100% hit rate for guys in the top 10 of the draft. It is 68% for the guys in the 11 through 32 range, or the bat, you know, the back half of the first round. I can't use 32 because the Patriots had a first round pick stripped from them. So that year, I think someone actually, a skill position guy, went at 32 that year, but was outside the first round, if my memory serves. And the drop off's pretty quick too, right? Like, even the, you know, from, if you miss the first 2 years, like, you go from 68 to 33% in terms of future odds of a hit. So it does, you know, and that's kind of the anti-Rashad Penny idea, right? Like, obviously his prices fell, but people that say, you know, oh, he still has like the pedigree, you should still attach it. Like, historically, it's been a pretty massive drop off. So, yeah, I mean, if you track the top 10, you know, do we treat like a top 15, like a top 10? Right, like, do you sort of do that? And I guess the easiest way to do it is use the base rate and then move from it, right? And I think, you know, one of the things I wrote about in the book is take 2/3 of the base rate and then adjust the other third and then add them up together, right? So if it's a, you know, whatever, a 68% hit rate you want to use as their base rate, and you think it should be closer to 80, right? You use the 80%, you take a third of that, you use the 68%, you take 2/3 of it, you add it together, and you get a composite ranking. And that would sort of be my thought. And there's other ways to do it. You can incorporate market value and those sorts of things to sort of keep you on the rails a little bit. But that's kind of how I would make the adjustment. And then I think that's pretty reasonable in terms of range of outcomes.
I'd say I'm not convinced that we have to treat running back the same way we treat quarterback. Pick value has relevance, especially if you take a smaller sample. But by and large, the hit rates stay pretty consistent if you just go by round, but I'm not against it. What I would say is, be careful of the mantra of running back or wide receiver or any position is so stocked, because again, we were saying that about running back last offseason, and it gave birth to an attempted draft strategy called robust RB. And this year we had David Montgomery kicking into the top five, James Robinson being a top five. Like, those weren't the guys that we said made the position so stocked, and it's in part because the position is so prone to variance because of injury. I mean, Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey would have been, I'm pretty sure, a top five running back if they'd stayed, and that would have given more proof to the idea. And robust RB, that wasn't to say that it can't work or isn't viable, but the idea of position is so full also stems from some of that valuation conversation you were talking about. We tend to be very hesitant to be low on players, and we're very prone to being high on players. When I'm taking on it, or when I'm trying to be funny about it, I say it's because we're cowardly. We don't like to only count 24 wide receivers and say those are the ones that matter, because we want to count 48, because we don't want to say there are 24 we don't like as much, because we want to be high on these guys just in case. So is the position stocked? I guess. But if we're talking in practical production terms, no more than any other time, because they can get injured, because James Robinson can happen, because Derrick Henry, like, try selling him for the same price as Jonathan Taylor. So is it stocked? Yes. But can they be replaced relatively rapidly and quickly, and we just forget that? Yeah. Yeah, that's very much also a thing. So there's a dynasty value is different than production. And so is it? And I would modify our opinion that it's so heavily stocked right now at talent. Like, if Etienne and Harris and Chuba are just world-beating prospects or really great prospects, the NFL will go to it. I don't think they're that level, but if they were, they would go to it. And the draft will tell us more about what they think, which goes to my, I don't want to discount draft value more recently, because if the NFL... I'm not sure how that logic works. They used to spend a lot of draft capital on first round picks, even though it's remained relatively consistent over the last 20 years, is the argument. But doesn't that mean getting drafted in the first round means more, not less? You know what I mean? I'm not sure of the logic on it. Like,
mm-hmm. Well, honestly, in Dynasty, the way that the market kind of treats players now, running backs never stocked, because as soon as guys hit, you know, year four, people are looking to get out of them for the next, you know, the next best running back. So you're hitting the, you know, I've already seen people talking about, should I get out of Nick Chubb? You know, that kind of argument. And
actually, that's a guy I wanted to ask you guys about. Sorry, that was random, but
well, no, but we have this historic class of 2017 that started to get contract extensions, and then the guys coming right after it, Barkley, Nick Chubb, 2018. Dynasty never treats that as stocked. They're immediately always looking for, who do I get out of now? Can I pivot from Nick Chubb to Najee Harris? You know, that's going to be an argument that a lot of – we can argue whether that's a good strategy or not, but Dynasty never sees the position stocked. Just like, you know, Peter was saying, that it's never stocked because we recycle them so quick. It creates this turnover where everyone's always look. Last year it was so prevalent. You know, dude, I have Nick Chubb. I'm trying to get Jonathan Taylor plus. Like that kind of – that was a pertinent discussion last season. It's just going to happen every year. Whoever the – 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 running backs that are, they go in the top 50 picks. It's going to happen every single year.
Yeah, Nick Chubb came up because someone asked me about him and trading for him, and I ended up having a conversation with John Bosch. If you're familiar with him, he's pretty much who I turn to about dynasty value. He's just shrewd that way. And he was pointing out that Nick Chubb is going to be a second contract running back. And at this stage, especially thinking about dynasty value, you have to start selling the guys who are going to be the guys you're going to have to sell pretty soon because the market's getting savvier. And so he was saying Nick Chubb's not really a buy unless you're really pushing for a win. And at this stage in the offseason, I'm not sure you can do that since we can't start rosters right now. But he also turned up on a weird list the exact same week. I was looking at running backs who in the top 24 get less volume, so are less expected points on average than their positional rank, but actually produce a higher number of points per game than you'd expect for their positional rank. And it was this weird little list, but like 6 out of 7 players hit that list, and there were 10 over the last 10 years and 2 in 2019, actually. But like it had this weird corollary to players who did more than you would expect on less volume actually ended up hitting top 5 or at least top 12 if they played a full season. And the only guy to really make an exception to that list was last year. It was Kenyon Drake, which is good because I was really saying not to buy Kenyon Drake this offseason. So I'm glad he didn't hit that list. But the only player in 2020 who fits that description is Nick Chubb. He did more points than you would expect for the volume he was getting at his positional rank. And that was like, is he a buy then? I don't know. So what... like what? Because someone talked to me about Nick Chubb outside of he's getting older. Like, is he a buy if you're pushing to win? Is anyone in that position right now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I especially in the tier that he's in, right? Like, there's a lot of different ways you could go in that tier. So you have, yeah, depending on how you fit it, right? Some of the younger guys might be in there. You could go younger than them. I struggle to see maybe the enormous upside, but is his like floor or median outcome like higher than a lot of other guys in that range or at the position in general? I think so. Yeah. But maybe that the ceiling isn't there. And that kind of goes back to worrying about hitting, you know, driver every hole instead of just putting the ball in play. Yeah. So I think that comes down to that decision. Adam, you have anything?
You got any thoughts?
You're the
I have an opinion, but I want to hear yours, Adam. I know you're kind of itching.
No, no, I had both of you bring up Trent Richardson tonight, and I thought that I was over Trent Richardson as a Browns fan, but you both of you brought him up. So, I got to be honest. I think Chubb's going to get a second contract here in Cleveland, which is, you know, not, it's not what I would do, but nope. Okay. So I think, I mean, competing now, I just Nick Chubb's a buy all day long for me. So I think that he just puts up points. So, I think he's the guys on the second contracts. I think you can, they're useful to you, you know, in a competing manner. So I just ride those guys out. And I think that Chubb at this point, he's going to get a second contract here. So, you know, I think dynasty value wise, like, yeah, you're still going to have another couple years out of him. So I wouldn't be looking to get out of him. I still think he's going to be productive here. So.
So I think we have to kind of adjust because this is something that I did for a while and I even preached it up until last year, but then you start to find that dynasty owners adjust very fast. It used to be, I draft a running back, especially one with really high pedigree. I ride him out until year 3. then hopefully I can sell them at this massive profit, hit the reset button, get assets on top, and maybe draft, you know, maybe I trade the fourth year Nick Chubb for the second year Jonathan Taylor, get a pick on top, beat the team that has Nick Chubb because Jonathan Taylor ends up outproducing Nick Chubb. Then I can buy back, you know, you basically sell them in their year three, year four window. Then you buy them back when nobody wants them, but they're still productive. Like Derrick Henry, I'll buy him back at this point and basically say, I'm taking a loss. Just like Jordan talked about with like Julio Jones, it's different at receivers, but like I'll buy Julio Jones. No way I'm going to ride him out. I'll buy Derrick Henry in year six or year seven, ride him out till he dies. But I didn't really want to have him in that prime sell window. That used to work, though. Now, if you go try to sell Nick Chubb, it's like, okay, you know, hey, I'll sell you Nick Chubb, and you give me the pick, you're going to take Najee Harris. That person goes, nah, no thanks. I'd rather hit the reset button. And they're already making the assumption Najee Harris is going to be better than Nick Chubb within 1 year or maybe 2 years at most. Yep. And you know how good Nick Chubb is or how good Derrick Henry is or Alvin Kamara, and you're going, nah, you know what? I'll just hold for a little while. If I can't capitalize on this window, I'm not going to sell. So that's where a lot of my Chubb and Henry shares are, and a lot of these guys that have been productive, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, I'm just in the hold range with those guys because you can't make this pivot downward to the RB1 in this class. Most of the teams that are in that position have no interest in doing that deal because, you know, if they're not a contender, then no chance. But even if they are, you know, they already valued Jonathan Taylor with Nick Chubb last year. Didn't even matter what they had done before. So that's different. That's not how it was like 3 or 4 years ago. You could always sucker somebody into recycling these running backs. You can't do it anymore.
And I was trying to do that with Chubb last year for Josh Jacobs, and I couldn't get it done. Like right. I was trying to do that all off season last year. And I mean, you couldn't get I got to the point where I was trying to do Chubb for Josh Jacobs in like a second, and I couldn't get it done.
Yeah, that pathway is just gone because everyone knows they want young running backs. And that's why I'm trying to get smarter at targeting the right running backs. Because instead of going for the hit rate at running backs, you really have to target individual players. So instead of looking for players in a more likely hit rate because they're in the first 3 years, instead of aging out, I guess, of at least their top 12 range or top five range is really what we're hunting. We have to kind of get better at pinpointing the exact guys who are going to be top five. And lots of those guys are young at running back, which is weird. But there is also, like we said, like said about this year, there's also the David Montgomerys. Like you're talking about Derrick Henry, but David Montgomery did it this year. And that's how I came to Nick Chubb, just trying to find a better process for trying to highlight those guys that aren't in the better hit rate category, that aren't going to carry dynasty value. So it's really an all or nothing kind of a trade. But yeah, we're going to have to start going more that way and getting smarter or better at targeting. But none of that has got anything to do with the dynasty analytics. So you all suck. Like, this is a dynasty of analytics party, guys. Speaking of which, anyone have Etienne as not the running back one in this class?
I haven't gotten that far yet.
I don't have ranks yet, but right now he's the lead contender.
Dude, you're crushing me because I can't do Najee. I can't. He's such an outlier. I just can't. But we'll see. I think just to your point though, it's time to do the opposite. I'm looking now at like Ezekiel Elliott, RB14, Joe Mixon, RB19, Derrick Henry, RB12. I'm buying those guys.
Yep. That's what I've been doing.
I'll go with the pick. I'll bet against now the top 50 pick running back in this class. You know, you give me Joe Mixon in a future first. I'll give you any running back you want in this class if you can get a deal like that. I'm going the other way, if you would have told me that last year that I would be trading the next big thing that has the profile at running back as a rookie for a fifth-year guy, I would laugh at you. But we've seen such an overcorrection. I'm actually going the other way. I'll be buying. My teams will be stuck with a bunch of old, aging, going to die on my roster running backs in the next couple of years just because of the way the market's flipped.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have so many teams like that.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we are at the 2 hour and 23 minute mark of this this mega show. So
about halfway through.
We got some East Coast guys here hitting it a little hard here at the back end of this process. So This is right now where Peter goes and rips off a 2 hour and 45 minute bender on some rookie metrics.
Let's talk about
it. So I just want to thank everyone for coming on. Thank Adam. You know, was that with my editing process invaluable there. Scott with the tight end premium chapter that a lot of people had asked me about, and I found the perfect person to write it, and I'm very grateful for that. It's excellent, so you can check that out. And and Peter, another thing that people had asked me a lot about, which was rookie metrics, and that's you know, something that comes up, but I think having the ability to actually go in there, and this is an evergreen thing, right? You'll be able to consistently. Hopefully. Yeah,
I was going to tell you, I was recently doing some new testing. We have to throw all that out, and then I'll start again.
It's going to be a 2022 edition, so we'll have to see what happens.
I did try to stay really general in that one because we do constantly update things. And like we were just talking about running back, so many things change. So I tried to write it as just kind of a baseline, what we know so far. So hopefully people find some utility in it at least. I appreciate you asking me, man. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed doing it.
Absolutely. So, I want to thank everyone for joining this conversation. I hope it was, I learned a lot, and I've got things that I'm going to have to do now. I'm going to have to go to the trading button. So, I certainly enjoyed it. And I want to thank you guys for coming on. It's always a good conversation. So that'll do it for the Analytics of Dynasty 2021 edition, book, launch event. I think is what I coined it. For the four of us, I'm Jordan McNamara. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we'll talk.